another episode of Behind the Vinyl, with Darren and Nicholas.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Good, mate. Good. Really good. And welcome to Behind the Vinyl. Looking forward to having a chat with you. Really are.
Yes. Yeah. Same here. Talking about one of my favorites.
All right.
Yeah. Look, this is straight off the bat. Man, this album was 13 years old when you were born.
Yeah, I know. It's weird, huh? This album's been old enough to drink a lot longer than I have.
Well, how did you pick up on Priest?
One of the first, I mean, Judas Priest were one of like the first metal bands that I really became aware of. I mean, it was bands, you know, Iron Maiden and Dio and Black Sabbath and Ozzy and, you know, the more prominent ones. And I feel like Judas Priest is a little, I mean, they're like, to those of us that know Judas Priest, they're like, you know, they're always mentioned in those sentences. And I just feel like not as many people are like, you know, Judas Priest. Like when I was on American Idol and I chose to sing You've Got Another Thing Coming, I randomly found it on the list of available cleared songs. And I took it to the producers of Idol. Am I allowed to swear here?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Man.
All right. Oh, fuck. Thank God. I took them the song and I was like, oh, I want to sing. I picked my song and they were like, all right, what is it? And I said, it's You've Got Another Thing Coming by Judas Priest. And they said, what the fuck is a Judas Priest? I was like, you're British. You should know more than I should. You know, you're like the same age as Rob Halford. Come on. You know, but, you know, these guys that produced that were producers on Idol. They were more from the theater and the ballet scene of London. But yeah, I was just always kind of loosely into Priest. I was more a Dio guy, and yep, got much more into Priest like in the last 10 years. You know, during that Idol time when I picked the song, I wasn't as big of a Priest fan as I am now. You know, and getting the chance to perform with Rob Halford and you know, even till now, putting out my own classic era kind of a heavy metal album and being able to talk to Rob Halford during the making of it and, you know, giving him the album to be like one of the first people that hears it, you know. So it's, you know, sending Christmas cards every year. it's pretty funny.
Cool. But how did you get into metal in the first day? Was it through like buddies of yours, or I mean, were your parents into metal, or what was the deal?
No, it wasn't my mom. Definitely not my mom. My mom was listening to like Christian radio and, like, you know, in the 90s, it was really weird Christian radio and Motown. I grew up on Motown. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah. And I mean, shit, Motown knows how to rock too. There's some, you listen to like an early, there's this Buddy Guy album I got really into this year. As one of like his first records, like live in San Francisco. And, there's a song called Leave My Little Girl Alone. And it starts off just like this mellow blues. You better leave my little girl alone. And then, whoa, yeah. It sounds like something off of like, you know, Zeppelin, Since I've Been Loving You. It's like, you know that Zeppelin took some things. They borrowed some things along the way.
Oh, sure.
One that Robert Plant definitely lifted, you know, and like, it sounds familiar, but I'm not sure I've actually heard it. Let me try. You know, let's put it on wax. But yeah, my one of my buddies in high school, Chris, he got me into metal. He gave me a Motorhead CD, and that kind of like really sparked me. And this was around the time that YouTube was really starting to take off, and a lot of videos were getting put up on there in like the mid 2000s. And that's when I got, you know, further into these bands and more invested, and like was able to be like, oh, what the fuck's like, what's a Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner? What is that? What's a Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner? And it's just like, whoa, you can make an 8-minute long song that's not Bohemian Rhapsody or November Rain? Cool. I'm down. You know, and finding Priest. And when I started to, when my voice started to change and starting to naturally go lower and deeper, was when I was like, oh, I don't want to lose it. I want to gain an octave up. Come on. Like, I'm already a tenor. How much higher can I sing? You know, and finding Maiden and finding more Priest and it wasn't really until like, I mean, this year I really gained real big appreciation and really dove into Priest's catalog, like every album, you know, in order, and was able to really find which ones really, really spoke to me. And those were Defenders of the Faith and this one, Sad Wings of Destiny. Like, really, I feel like in 2020, the album I listened to the most was Sad Wings of Destiny. I can't imagine how many times I listened to it. Probably 40, 50 times all the way through, like
in different
weeks or days or, you know, times. But I really, really devoured this album.
Because it's somewhat of a like, we've done so many of these shows, you know, 100 plus of Ed. A couple of Judas Priest things have popped up. Definitely Unleashed in the East. It's a very popular record with with the old school heavy metal guys like David Ellison. You know, he talked about it on the show, and but this Sad Wings, not so much, because it's so early. You know, it's before the commercial break, really, of Prince.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And there's so much to it. You know, there's like. For me, the highlight of Unleashed in the East is Victim of Changes, and Unleashed in the East I look at as more of a compilation. You know, it's a collection of things. And it's great, and that's nothing to take away from it. But I don't look at that as being like an album.
No, it wasn't. You know.
And you know, it's on everybody's list as it should be. And that version of Victim of Changes is, you know, it's tops, especially the very end after the no, and then and the crowd goes wild and he goes, thank you. His voice cracks. I love it. Whenever I play that song, I always do that. Thank you. You know, whenever I sing it with a band. But you know, how it begins on Victim of Changes, on Sad Wings of Destiny, you know, it's so much slower. It's so much more psychedelic. It's just, you know, and that's how they created it. So it's fun to listen to that and hear, like, you know, because I heard the original version from Sad Wings after I had, you know, been consuming the Unleashed in the East version. So to go back and to really be like, this is fucking weird, you know, this is so slow, it's like a demo, you know. But then, you know, going back and hearing like an original version of the idea of it called like Whiskey Woman, you know, long before they put it on the album, is awesome too. But it's yeah, like stuff like that. It just, seeing them at that stage and seeing this and listening to this album that really sparked that, you know, because it's like, it just like, I feel like that one really was like their seminal, you know, the seminal Priest album. Yeah, I mean, Rob still had hair. He had a lot of it, you know, and they were all kind of in there, like KK Downing looked like Johnny Winters, and yeah, it's just trippy to see. It's cool to see, you know, what they were before we see, you know, what we know that they turned into.
Before what they evolved into. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
We'll be right back.
She was wonderful. Once she was fine. Once she was beautiful. Once she was mine. Changes come over her body. She doesn't see me anymore. Now changes come over her body. She doesn't see me anymore.
When did you start singing? And did you start singing before you started playing guitar, or how did that all work?
Yeah, I've been singing since I was singing out the womb, you know. my mom gave birth to me and I came out hitting a high C. but I've been I was in different choirs and theater groups growing up, and then I got given a hand-me-down guitar when I was 10 or 11 and a chord book of Elvis songs, taught myself how to play Heartbreak Hotel, and you know, and then the rest is history.
Yes, of course.
Well, Elvis, great guitar player. Elvis had a great guitar player. I'm missing his name at the moment, but
yeah, I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, he doesn't get the credit really for what he deserves. You know, it wasn't just Elvis. You know, the music underneath it was amazing.
Oh yeah, he was just the preacher. He wasn't the choir.
Exactly. Very true.
Yeah.
So singing. So you got into because you got born in 1989, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to say, you know, 10 years time from that, you know, 10, 11, 12 years time, you know, you're kind of hitting the end of the grunge and all that kind of stuff. Who were the main vocalists that influenced you? Did you go to the Dios as early on, or did you have the Chris Cornells or something in between?
No, I don't listen to any music from the 90s. I just can't. There's something about what I know, what grunge did to the music that I love so much. It's just, so much of it sounds the same to me. And there's, you know, where I feel like, oh, this would sound so much better if it was, you know, a distorted guitar, or like, you know, if it had a hook, it'd be great. If there were lyrics here that I can understand, you know, you know, there's just something about a singer. Yep. You know, like a singer, you can hear them. They're performing. Their voice soars over the music, and it doesn't just sound like another instrument in the band. As to me, you know, listening to it, not Chris Cornell. I mean, I found Cornell a lot later with a solo cut of his from Euphoria Morning called "When I'm Down."
Right. Yeah.
And and that's how I found Chris Cornell, which is great. I love that. And I haven't even dug down and listened to very much any Soundgarden, really, other than the Black Hole Sun. It just hasn't been on my list. You know, I like that. the memory that I have of his vocals is so, I don't know, it's just genuine. It's a genuine memory of something that he wrote, you know, at a different time in his life. The vocalists that I really got into at an early age were Freddie Mercury and Steve Perry and Lou Gramm from Foreigner. And Matt, God, talk about hits. Foreigner. I was looking at a hits list of them, and I'm just like, fuck. Hit. You know, you play like a Foreigner drinking game. You can, you know, you'll be wasted after all the hits. Come on. Every song that's a hit is like, oh, gosh. Oh, God. So Robert Plant, you know, of course, and then Dio, you know, Dio happened when I was like 15 or 16, and heard Holy Diver and was like, oh, whoa, this is cool. What's he singing about? I don't know. Something about a tiger. I don't know. It's cool. It's not the eye of the tiger. It's the eye of the cat in the black and blue. Something's coming for you. What is it? Look out. No. You know, just like, I just love it. Like, it's so, I come from a theater background, for the most part. And that's what led me to being in bands, was the pit drummer in one of the theater performances I was doing of Grease, playing Danny. And just met the drummer, and he's like, man, I love your voice. And I've got this band, and we're tired of listening to our guitar player, you know, sing like Eddie Vedder. And, you know, you can actually sing. We'd love to, you know, bring you in and see if it worked. And it did. And I've, you know, been rocking and melting faces ever since. So, but yeah, just those early guys, and Robert Plant and Jim Morrison and you know, just the really reachable ones, you know.
Yeah.
The really accessible ones. It's not until you really find if you really like it when you're listening to, you know, Jeff Tate and like Miljenko Matijevic and Steelheart, like that one's reaching. But you know, when I found him too, I was like, oh my God, you can be 40 and still look like that and sing like that. You know, he wasn't even 40. Maybe he was 40. I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, back when I thought 40 was old, you're like, whoa, these guys are, look at Whitesnake. These guys are fucking old. Whoa. You can still rock like that. Cool. You know, I'm just like, I didn't know, you know, you're a kid. What do you know?
Yeah.
You mentioned Freddie Mercury, and there's a connection to Sad Wings of Destiny with Queen. Queen recorded Bohemian Rhapsody at Rockfield Studios, where Sad Wings of Destiny was recorded as well.
Oh, really? Do you know what year? Like, did those years match up? Because Sad Wings is 76. When was Night at the Opera done?
Yeah, that's, let's see here. Night at the Opera was 75.
Okay.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some, like, if you look at like Epitaph on Sad Wings, it's very Queen. There's like some real Queen kind of arrangements on there. I look at that as like it's Priest, but it doesn't sound like Priest. It sounds like Carole King meets the Beach Boys meets Queen. It's very like, you know, it's kind of a Animal Sounds, you know, Tapestry. It's kind of that kind of ilk, if you will. Yeah. Such a beautiful song, and I'm just like, you can't find any recording or video of them ever playing that live too, which is also something. And to know that Glenn Tipton wrote it, you know, and just like it's such a deep, deep, deep song, just lyrically, you know, a lonely grave and soon forgot. Only wind and leaves amend his mournful song. Yet he shouts his epitaph out clear. For anyone who's passing near, it means the person lying here is you and you and you and you. You know? And then a digga 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 digga. Beware! Take heed, our time is near. You know, it's so like, there's so many differences on this album. That's just why it's so much fun to listen to. And whenever it comes on and I'm listening to it, if I'm out for a walk or something and Island of Domination comes on in between there, I just can't help but kind of stop and, you know, strike a stance and do that Bruce Dickinson kind of thing and then like take off running, you know. There's a I love it. Something about it. I don't know. Something about it.
You're in for surprise. You're in for a shock. In London town streets, when there's darkness and fire, when you least expect me, and you turn your back, I'll attack. I smile when I'm sneaking through shadows by the wall. I laugh when I'm creeping, but you won't hear me at all. Fear, never knowing if I'm near. I'm sly and I'm shameless, nocturnal and nameless. Except for the Ripper, or if you like, Jack the Knife.
I think Freddie Mercury and Queen had a major influence on all those guys. I think they were kind of like the top of the, you know, like Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath idolizes them and is really good friends with them. I think the Zeppelins I think everyone looks at Zeppelin as well, but I think the Zeppelins and the Black Sabbaths and the Judas Priest all looked up to just what kind of a band Queen were.
Yeah, they were kind of the elder statesmen just with what they were doing at the level that they were doing it at. It's just, you know, to be
that were a different
and all those guys from, you know, just like the same country as well.
Yeah.
And I haven't been over there, but it's doesn't look very large, you know, it's just so like doesn't look very large on the map. It's only about this big, but it's, you know, even in that sense of like, oh, you know, these guys in a way, you know, could be trying to outdo one another. And, you know, and then your peers are just like, all right, guys, we're just going to leave this here. This is Night at the Opera. We're just going to leave it there. Talk amongst yourselves, you know. It's like, oh shit, Zeppelin's like, yeah, we've had enough, we're not even gonna try. You know, it's just, yeah, it's crazy.
Well, you talked about how small England was, like, also super super small is the area where all of these bands come from, you know. Judas Priest and Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin all come from the Midlands, you know. I think they were, you know, they were basically nearly, you know, glorified neighbors, all these guys. I think they knew knew each other, you know?
Yeah.
That's so, it's just crazy. It's crazy to think of that, about that. And just all the other guys that were also there too, you know, like I think of like you know, some of the guys from the Stones and Ron Wood and you've Jeff got like Beck Steve and, Jeff Beck, Steve Marriott,
exactly,
you know, and how all these guys are interconnected and know each other. And you know, I heard a story about Zeppelin or something that their old manager or something, they were trying to find a singer, and Jimmy Page suggested Steve Marriott. It's something about like, oh, if you ever bring Steve Marriott around here, I'll break his fucking shins or something like that. Just like they'd, you know, but like if not for that manager, Steve Marriott could have been the lead singer of Led Zeppelin. You know, it's just weird to think about little stuff like that, that they're that, you know, connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also you have like the Midlands and all that, and you have all these bands, and it was all like real working class people.
Yeah.
Coming from like these, well, either the small towns or the big towns, and it was just like industrial towns like Birmingham and so on. And I mean, honestly, like back in the 70s and the 60s, it looked really depressing. I mean,
oh, it was like straight out of the Depression.
Yeah.
All their like, parents.
That,
yeah.
That brought a lot to the music as well, that you had like these kids growing up. And as they've said themselves over and over again, that it was, you know, the only way to go really was to, you know, go to the whatever steelworks or whatever it was. That was your future, unless right. You ended up in a band.
That's crazy. So at that point, it's almost like, you know, survival.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Music for survival and escape.
Yeah.
Definitely for escape.
Definitely.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think about how not. I mean, it was kind of a stagnant pool, you know, and it very well could have been if you know, if not for the talent that kept manifesting from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you mentioned you know Rob pretty well, Rob Halford pretty well. You've sung with him and you've chatted with him and you have
I don't know his middle name or anything, but you know, but I don't know if he puts his socks on before his pants, but you know, not that I'd want to know, but yeah, we've kind of loosely kept in touch over the years since Idol, and it's been, you know, almost 10 years this year, so a decade of just kind of you know, texts here and there. He was the we've just kept in touch.
Have you shared to him your love for Priest? Have you said to him like you know, fuck Priest meant this much to me, or do you know have you ever asked him why he doesn't play Epitaph, you know, like anything like that?
No, I'll ask him right after this. I wonder if I could text him while I'm in the interview. Like over 2020, when I was working on my album, which comes out soon, The Beast Awakens, yep. February 12th via Frontiers Records, SRL.
And congratulations on that. Killer.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But, you know, while I was making the album and after I wrote the title track back in like January 2020, the title track of The Beast Awakens, the song itself, I sent it to him. I was trying to get him to guest on something on the album, but he was just way too busy at the time. But he, you know, he was honest that he was too busy, but was honest that he, you know, still was like, yeah, send me songs. I'll, you know, if you need moral support or something, you know, and he did. He was very great with that of, you know, this is a great song. You're on a good track, you know, keep it up. Of like, oh, okay, cool. I will. and once the album was finished and had the masters in like October, he was one of the first people I sent the album to. I was just like, would you be interested in listening? You know, if not, I totally understand. If you're too busy, like, you know, please just tell me to shut up and go away. But he was like, no, please send it to me. I'd love to listen to it. And he did and wrote to me like a couple days before Christmas after he got our Christmas card in the mail. Just saying like, I listened to it. I really enjoyed it. Listened to it several times, you know, we really enjoyed listening to it, him and his partner. And just like, wow, that's really cool. You know, that's just, wow. You know, even if the thing never came out, just like, even if the album was never released, just knowing like, oh God, he enjoyed it. Oh, cool. That's great. But yeah, it was great. Like when I found, I went for a walk on the beach and caught a vibe, caught a nice vibe and took a walk on the beach and listened to Sad Wings of Destiny, like for the first time all the way through, like last summer. And, or no, it was before then. It was like in springtime. It was right when I was like really deep in writing my album. And most of those songs were written in March, February, March, April, and May. And yeah, went for a walk on the beach and listened to it. And like, you know, just as I'm like at the peak of the effects of the stuff of marijuana, which is legal here. Sorry, guys. And Amsterdam's not far, I guess. A couple hours by train, you'll be fine. You know, you'll be high enough as soon as you need to. Just like, and realize the full weight of this album, and it instantly had this feeling of like, oh my God, this album means so much to me. Oh my God, I understand it now. Like, I understand almost in a sense where you guys were at that time, what you had to prove at that time, you know, of just like, and they were young too. And like, we can see that, like looking at like the BBC old gray whistle test footage, yeah, of them doing Dreamer, Deceiver, Deceiver, you know, and just like, oh my God, you guys were so little and so young and like so angsty, you know, and just like, I really understand it now. Like, thank you for writing that album. You know, you had no idea in the 70s that you would be, you know, in 2020 that you'd be texting with some American kid from a TV show that you sang with on, and he'd be telling you how much this album meant to him at, you know, at 31 years old. But God, thank you so much. And, you know, and the same thing with Defenders of the Faith, and just like, you know, and just to be able to write that, you know, directly to the person and know that it's going to buzz in their pocket, you know, is just like, oh, that's just, it's crazy. It's really crazy. You know, I really don't take any of this for granted, and I'm really, really humbled by it, of just like, this is really fucking cool, you know, and hold on to that in hopes that like, whoa, what are the odds that in like 35 years, some kid that I maybe had an interaction with, you know, might be listening to The Beast Awakens in 35 years and might, like, you know, whatever the form of communication is at that point, you know, might buzz me into my you know, inner mind and be like, Durbin, are you there? Oh, what's that? My subconscious, you know, someone like talking via chip, you know, and just being like, gosh, The Beast Awakens, like, it means everything to me, and just be like, what the fuck, this is crazy, you know, wow, you know, it's like a moment to step back and look at like, wow, you know, we've done things.
Yeah, but it is interesting how powerful music can be, and yeah, the emotions you can get from, like, you listening to Sad Wings of Destiny. It's fantastic.
Well, it's there's only 12 notes.
Yeah,
there's only 12 fucking notes. You know, how many songs have been written in the last 300 years using the same fucking 12 notes?
Yeah,
and you know, and just the stories that people are able to tell and the weight and the gravity in which they tell them in. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you. Like, I find with the music that I've made in my previous solo albums is like, people will find healing. They will find comfort in something that, you know, you didn't even write with healing or comfort in mind.
Right.
That's what's amazing with music. You know, it's just 12 notes. And the fact that, you know, it can heal lives, it can you know, put air back in people's lungs that haven't had a good inhale in a while.
True.
And I have fan that's, you know, when I was on Idol and brought Zach Wilde out, I got a call from the Make-A-Wish Foundation that somebody wanted their last wish, you know, this kid, like, if he was going to die tomorrow, he wanted to spend his last day with me. And fortunately, he's still kicking. He's still, you know, alive. And that's incredible as well. But just like the fact that, you know, that was something that happened, and just, you know, the fact that any of these things happen, that any of this shit happens, is like, wow, this is really, it's really, really amazing. And, and really, really special, you know, what you can do with very limited, limited tools, 12 notes. What the fuck can I do with 12 notes? What do you expect, you know, and everything, you know?
It's 12 notes, but it's also, you know, it is 12 notes, but it's also, it's the inner being that's come out. It's like someone like Eddie Van Halen, you know, you can give a good guitar player Eddie Van Halen's guitar and rig, but it ain't going to sound the same, you know, because, there's something special, you know, and that's music in a nutshell. I want to dig a little bit about Idol. You know, you brought out Zach Wilde to play with you. So I'm going to ask you how that is. You know, you played with Rob Halford, but you basically kicked it off by singing Steven Tyler's song to Steven Tyler. But you did it humbly, but you also did it with balls of steel too. You know, you were just like you. you weren't scared at all. You just kind of were so confident in your own voice then. How was that?
I was terrified. I was crying. That was just the experience of it, just being there. I mean, I remember sitting behind the curtain before it was my turn to go and audition, and you can kind of faintly hear the other person auditioning, and it was almost my turn, and I'm sitting there in these chairs, and then I hear the producers say, "Oh, we're gonna break for lunch." I was literally going to go out there in like 2 minutes and it was going to be my turn to audition. And then the producer walks by and they're like, "All right, guys, just stay here. You know, we're going to bring you back to the holding room with all the other auditioners in just a second. We just need to get the judges out first." And then walks by Jennifer Lopez and then like waves, and then out walks Steven Tyler and Randy Jackson right in front of me. And I'm just like, like, this is unreal. And Steven walks right over to me and he's like, "Hey, look at that smile, man. Wow." And he comes over and he grabs my arm. I had one tattoo at the time, which I can get it right there. I figured out it's my son's name. It says Hunter on my arm.
Oh, okay.
But, and he's like, "Wow, look at that tattoo, man. That's beautiful. What's that say, huh?" I was like, "Oh, it's my son's name. It says Hunter." He's like, "Wow, man, that's really beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Wow. Look forward to hearing you. Look forward to listening to you. Thanks." And got to say something to Randy for a second, because we have mutual friends, which is weird. Randy, my friends Dale and Tyran wanted me to say hi. "Oh, Tyran and Dale from the Doobie Brothers, man. Oh, hell yeah. Steven, you remember Tyran and Dale? Oh, yeah, Dale Ackerman, Tyran Porter, yeah. Great guys. Hope they're well, yeah." You know, and just like, whoa, this is crazy. And then my wife, currently my wife and was my fiance at the time, we're sitting and I'm telling her the story and they're still breaking for lunch. And out of the corner of my eye, I see like somebody's face in a doorway, just like this, just like, and it was Steven Tyler just spying on me, just peeking, just peeping, peeping at Heidi and I as we're just sitting there talking. And he's just like, you know, just like, what the fuck is going on? And so then by the time it's like my turn to audition, it's like I feel like kind of warmed up, like I've been around him for a little bit, and it was a little bit more like, okay, I can go in there, I'm not as nervous. You know, before he walked, even like when I was sitting there and before he walked out, on my little flip phone, I had like these little videos that I had recorded from YouTube. Just, you can barely see them, you could barely hear them, but it was of Steven singing live with Aerosmith, singing "What It Takes." And "Tell me what it takes to let you go." And him doing this kind of this rap that always just got me really excited. He did this kind of rap before the song and sang it a cappella and just like, yeah! Just did this crazy scream, and it just got me really pumped and excited. So I was listening to that like before he walked out, and then the fucking real guy, I'm like trying to make out his face on the screen, and then I'm like, "Oh, there he is, he's so confident." And then, oh, there he comes, he walks. I'm like, close the phone real quick, like, I wasn't listening to you. And but yeah, it's just crazy, like getting out there and then being in that position to sing and just giving it literally everything you have in that moment. And I mean, they asked if I wanted to sing something else at that point. And, you know, I had the opportunity to ask Steven if I could sing "Dream On." And the fact that he said yes, it was just like, oh, all right. You know, still pressure's on, and I'm not, you know, stoked with my performance of it by any means, because it's but just the fact that happened, the fact that you brought it up, you know, that's not something I've thought about in a very, very, very long time. So to sit here and to think about how it felt is difficult for me to tell you, but it, you know, just again, I'm very humbled by it. It's the fact that I got that opportunity is, you know, on national television in front of, you know, 40, 50 million viewers. It's just like, whoa, my life? You know, this is weird. This is really, really weird.
That's great. Well, you delivered, so well done.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Old man sitting there, his head bowed down. Every now and then, he'll take a look around, and his eyes reflect the memory pain of years gone by. He can't regain nostalgic dreams he'll never see again. With trembling hands, he wipes a tear. Many fall like rain, there's one for every year. And his life laid out so clearly now, life that's but death.
So nearly now, life once he clung to.
They shout his epitaph out clear for anyone who's passing near it names the person.
So you go back, you chose a Priest song. We're just kind of we're going to pull out some of the metal things that you did on that show.
Please. Yeah.
You pulled out a Priest song and you said you were shocked to find it there. But wasn't there a Queen song on there, or wasn't there maybe not Dio, but was there?
No, there was no Dio. I every week I went to the person that cleared songs, Robin, and I said, "Hey, Robin, any word from the Dio estate?" And Wendy Dio kept coming back with nicer and nicer notes. I wanted to play Rainbow in the Dark so badly on Idol, so badly. Wanted to play Rainbow in the Dark, and they'd never clear it. But yeah, I mean, looking at the list, I mean, it was all there was a lot of Queen, a lot of Bon Jovi, a lot of Aerosmith, of course, but like,
yep.
I didn't want to sing Aerosmith, again, I already did it for the audition and why sing the guy's song when he's there? Yep. And if you can't do anything else, for it, and so I looked at the list and this is our first time on the stage. I've got to compete with the other 12 guys that are singing that night and what they're doing. I want to do something different. There's a couple guys that are hitting some high notes, in their own styles, but it's still, if there's too many screamy dudes on the show, you're in trouble. You got to do something that really sets yours apart in a different way. And then I saw you've got another thing coming on there. And after like my third or fourth time perusing the list, and and I also had to pick something that maybe like one of the girls didn't pick also for like the night before, the next night. And which one of the girls was like, "Oh, you picked Judas Priest? I was going to pick that." And I almost picked that one. I'm like, "Oh, fuck. Thank God. Thank God I picked this before you, or I would end up singing like Herman's Hermits or something." which I did later. That was one time the producers, I let them coax me into singing a song and told me, "Shh, it's going to be okay. You can get through Herman's Hermits. You can get through Something Tells Me I'm in Something Good. Here's some white pants, all right? Now pull Jennifer Lopez out from her seat. We're not going to tell her you're going to do it. Just surprise her and see what happens." What is wrong with you guys? Why are you setting us up? Why are you setting us up to fail and be awkward after we slayed? Goddamn. But it's just in any of these moments. But yeah, when we finally took it to the stage and started to do You've Got Another Thing Coming, it was like trying to get the house band to be like, don't you guys have distortion? Don't you have like a gain? There's a little button. There should be a little button on your amp, unless you had it customly removed, that you press that little thing in and everything gets really loud and really heavy and exciting. You know, I was trying to get them to turn it up to really like get that to come across on TV. And even still, it's like, it's really weak. You know, when I listen back to it, I'm like, man, they just, why didn't they just turn it up? I just wanted it to be really like, punch you directly square between the eyes, grandma, you know. I wanted old people to turn it on and just be like, whoa, you know. And and it was great for what it was. I mean, they definitely did know what they were doing in mixing it in a way that was still accessible to their audience, because it was bringing something in that, you know, the wives that are watching, the housewives watching these shows, weren't necessarily, you know, hip to, but their husbands that were like, you know, poo-pooing in the corner or in the kitchen were like, so Judas Priest, you know, the heavens, my answer, you know, my prayers have finally been answered. Someone brought metal. You know, someone's singing something I like. Yay. You know, so it's like that.
But I'm kind of fascinated by Wendy Dio turning a song like that down. Whatever she may think or whatever anyone thinks about Idol. I mean, that's as you mentioned, 40, 50 million people watching. That's a great way to get your stuff out there. Maybe reach a younger audience or something like that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I think what I recall is, and with all due respect, and I completely respect it because it's, you know, it's her prerogative.
Yeah.
But it's you know, she just kind of said something along the lines of, I don't think that it's just not in line with the brand. You know,
right. Yeah,
and so it was, but it's interesting to hear that from her, and then to see like Priest be like, "Oh, we'd love to come on Idol and perform," yes. and Rob, you know, Rob is at the Idol finale, and like Lady Gaga and Beyonce performed, and all these other people, and he's just like, "Oh, which room is Gaga in?" You know, I've got to go find her. You know, just like, you know, it's just, you know, to each their own, really. But you know, it's just nice to, I don't know. It's nice that, you know, even when somebody says no, it's nice when somebody else says yes, you know, and you, yeah. I respect the no, and I respect the, her viewpoint on that. And, you know, like I said, it's her prerogative, and you know, she's continuing on with, you know, trying to make decisions of what Ronnie would have, found best, mm-hmm. you know. All but the hologram, perhaps, but
yeah.
he also didn't like that song. Ronnie didn't like that song, Rainbow on the Dark.
Really?
No,
oh, I didn't know that.
He thought it was too poppy. He wanted to. He physically
maybe
was
it's the
trying.
Keyboards.
It was the keyboards, and he played. Him and Jimmy Bain played the keyboard, and they weren't great. And it's just too poppy. He hated it so much. He was trying to cut the tape, and everyone stopped him cutting the tape to destroy it, and begged him to put it on the record. And he since said that he's eternally grateful that he did it. But yeah. still not my favorite song. You know. That
but then, like a couple years later, he puts out "Hungry for Heaven."
Yeah.
"Hungry for Heaven" is the shitty version of "Rainbow in the Dark."
Rainbow in the Dark.
You know, you're a dancer, but you're walking on air. You know, you're hungry for heaven, but you need a little hell. Oh well, just like, come on. It's rainbow adjacent. It's very Rainbow in the Dark adjacent.
Yeah.
Puts a lot of things into the things that make you go,
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolutely.
sin after sin, I have endured. Yet the wounds I bear are the wounds of love.
So you and what's the singer of Queen, Adam Lambert?
Yeah,
I'd say you and Adam Lambert kind of brought a little bit of respect, definitely, to the rock world.
I'll take credit for him.
Take credit for him. I can remember.
Adam says thank you.
Well, the guy's got chops, you know. You sung with Halford. You went on to play with Quiet Riot. You know, he's playing with Queen. I think Slash maybe mentored him as well on the show, I think.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he played with Kiss on the show.
He played with Kiss. You played with Zakk Wylde. It kind of suddenly Exactly. In all honesty, this show at times, some people are being like, fuck Idols or X Factor or whatever, but it's you two guys have definitely brought some credibility back in the rock world for it.
Yeah.
Again, very, very humbled. I mean, I remember working karaoke and putting on Adam's like solo material, like What Do You Want From Me and that kind of stuff, which is very, you know, very much different than what he did on the show, which was, which I always felt let down by. But I'm sure people could say the same thing with my solo album. Like, oh, you did metal on the show and now you got this kind of pop rock adjacent sort of thing. But, you know, still it's, we've all got to play the game. I mean, it's really about what you're able to do with it. It's a platform, you know, but then everybody's individual, music tastes and what's piquing you creatively at the time. Like I'm still waiting for Adam to like fully unleash like a metal album, you know. I think he's totally got it in him, and I'm excited to hear what that sounds like if he ever does it. Like I remember when I heard I heard Fall Out Boy when Fall Out Boy like came back and like repackaged themselves. And one of their songs that I had heard, I heard a Fall Out Boy song, I heard a Panic at the Disco song, and I was like, wow. Yeah, did you hear that new Adam Lambert song? It's really good. You know? And then come to find out it's not him. And I'm like, oh, damn. Like, I was waiting for it, you know? I was so ready for that. And, you know, but just like, you know, I've done albums that, you know, I listen to now. And I was like, God, what was I thinking? But, you know, they do, like I said, they provide comfort and you know, people really love them for what they are and what they get from them. So yeah, yep. can't unwish something, you know, or say anything negative about anything you've done before, because it might be somebody's, you know, someone's bread and butter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
True.
Mr. Wild, how did you go with Mr. Wild?
I knew I wanted to play heavy metal from the 84 animated film, as we were doing Songs from Movies Week. And I had had an interesting mentor session with our mentor, which was Jimmy Iovine Interscope Records. Yeah.
Yeah.
I called him Bronte because I thought he looked like a brontosaurus. and he was a sore ass most of the time. So we were, hold on. Do you want the remote? Here's the remote. I had the remote in my pocket. Sorry.
my wife.
Round of applause. Thank you. Make a little cameo. All right.
That's so stereotypical male. You know, like having the remote control. You know,
I just have to. I have to hide it from my son because he's 11 and he's like obsessed with Legos and Minecraft. So he'll just put YouTube on and just watch just these god awful guys just like, oh, look what I did. I made a crafting table and now we're going to go over here and I chopped down the tree. You never leave a tree branches without a trunk. It's you can't do that. It's against the rules. There are no rules. It's just I can't handle it. So I hide it every night so he doesn't wake up at 5 in the morning and watch a bunch of Minecraft crap. But anyway, Zach Wilde. Yep. Sorry. As Peter Griffin says, but I digest. you know what really grinds my gears? I was doing the mentor session with Jimmy Iovine and he said, like, you know, I don't think you should play this song. You know, you're going to sound like a Sammy Hagar wannabe ripoff. You know, I think you should do a Pinball Wizard from The Who, from Tommy. And I was like, okay, well, Jimmy, you know, I think about these things. And, you know, last week was Elton John week. And why I'm not going to stay in the same lane. I want to do something very different from what I did. And also, you know, something that's true to me. You know, if you remember in the film of Tommy, who sang Pinball Wizard, it was Elton John. I'm not going to do two Elton John songs week after week, you know, and just making a case for myself, you know. And so I stuck to my guns with heavy metal. But Jimmy ended up forcing a couple other people to change their songs. And then I did like this symposium backstage at one of the interviews that we were doing, our like sit down interviews with the Idol producers, and just kind of like, that's where it came really organically. The whole idea of like, give metal a chance. Like, why won't they just let me give metal a chance? Why do they keep trying to change my songs? Why can't I just stay in this lane? I understand it's not Interscope. It's not pop. Jimmy Iovine doesn't see money in it. Of course, you know, he's right. Like the conglomerate of it. He just made $1 billion with, you know, with Beats yeah, by Dre. You know, he just, yeah. why does he care if I sing this metal song? You know, why is he so like, I just want to shake him. I called him Uncle Jimmy too, because we had a real love-hate relationship. We were like, sometimes we were all like hugging and hanging out. And then other times it was just like, I cannot handle him. and also I'm humbled to have gotten the opportunity to have that sort of a relationship with Jimmy Iovine. You know, that in and of itself is like, dude, like, geez, I think about it now. Like, I haven't thought about Jimmy Iovine in like 10 years. And I'm like, man, that was something too. Like, wow, what an experience. What a career. It's great. I've enjoyed myself. I've gotten around. But I had started hanging out with Chris Jericho, because he was competing on Dancing with the Stars, which filmed in the same studio.
Now I remember. I've heard that he was like next to the studio next door.
Yeah. Yep. So anybody that knows about Jericho or has read any of his books knows that him and Zach have been really, really close friends for a long time, since the late 90s. And so I talked to Chris and I was like, you know, I really want to just stick it to Jimmy. I really want to really prove my point here. And we were like sitting at the Rainbow or something, eating mozzarella sticks. And and Chris was drinking a Grey Goose and water in a short glass, because then you don't get as much water and you get more goose. which, if you've ever tried it, I can't do it. This was just at the time that he stopped drinking beer. Lucky me. You know, and so, you know, I was like, do you think I could, you know, could you put me in touch with Zach? You think Zach would want to come and play on this song with me? You know, give him like a 16 or 32 bar, you know, solo in there where you can just shred and whatever. And it's a Sammy Hagar song, you know, it's metal. It's, you know, we'll look cool. You know, we're not going to look too stupid. Me speaking for myself, but, you know, and he was like, well, his wife manages him currently, Barbara Ann. And so he put me in touch with her and I negotiated it. I went to the producers of Idol and I said, all right, I'm in touch with Zach Wilde. If I can book him and I can work out all the details, will you allow him to come and play with me on performance night? And they were like, yeah, no one's ever come to us like that and pitched a performer to come with them and pitch that they'll do all the work themselves. So they're like, yeah, sure. You know, go for it. And, you know, fortunately they let me, and fortunately Zach showed up, you know, on the same day as the Make-A-Wish, my Make-A-Wish kid, which was also crazy, you know, just those two things coming together of like, you know, oh, here, Cole, you want to meet Zach Wilde too? You know, here's some guitar picks and like, here's a handful of guitar picks for my Make-A-Wish kid, you know, and it's just, it's crazy. Something like, I feel like somebody told me that Zach thought he was going there to perform on Dancing with the Stars, and then he's like, you know, he goes over to the Dancing with the Stars side and they're like, no, we don't have you listed to perform here. I think you're over at American Idol. Like, you know, so he was like, oh wait, hold on, what? You know, he was already there. He was already signed up. He already filled out the SAG-AFTRA paperwork, you know, to get his paper. So yeah, we we did it. I got him. I tricked him, you know.
That's awesome.
Love it. That's great. Cool story. He's a character and a half, that man.
Oh, he definitely is. I mean, he luckily the day that he got there, Jericho was also able to kind of come over and just kind of like, you know, cut the tension if there was any. Yeah, keep it contained. And because he knows that Zach can get on a couple tangents as soon as we start talking about wrestling, and he goes off on the Ultimate Warrior, and that's his that's his ride or die. Ride or die. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Wow.
Love it.
You follow the dreamer through the purple hazy clouds. He could control our sense of time. We thought we were lost, but no matter how we try, everyone
more things and then we're going to let you go because we're kind of getting into getting close to the end. any standout songs, any other standout songs from Sad Wings that really, really hit you?
Well, of course, you know, Dreamer, Deceiver, and Deceiver. Just the way that those, just that kind of song. It's kind of it's got like a Misty Mountain Hop kind of a vibe to the lyrics of Dreamer, Deceiver. You know, just kind of like we were in the park and we got high and like a cop approached us and that sort of thing. Like, you know, somebody like came by and, you know, he asked us to stay for tea and have some fun. Whoa. He said that his friends would all drop by. It kind of reminds me of that in that kind of a playfulness. But I don't know, something about it, you know. He said in the cosmos is a single sonic sound that is vibrating constantly. And if we could gray up, just like how he goes in like this in all he's Rob Halford is like he's like a Patti LaBelle in a vocal sense. And you might not know what I'm talking about, but Patti LaBelle, she has so many different like tonalities in her voice. Yeah. Sometimes like the perfect example, and I go back, I listen to it all the time, and I fucking love it, is Patti LaBelle singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And in any performance, but specifically these specific performances, I can't remember exactly what they are, the year or the circumstances, but, you know, she starts with this really, like, operatic somewhere, and then she goes into this, like, nasally, over the rainbow. And then she gets like, she takes it off into this like, and just doing runs and like going into these deeper and grittier parts of her voice. And Rob does that on this song. Like he sings with such like this, and I mean this with all the love in the world, but just like this diva, you know, that kind of a diva thing, that very showman, very showy, very over the top. And, I don't know. There's just something about it, but just the journey of that song, the fact that it's two songs, you know, right, Dreamer, Deceiver, and then Deceiver. What do you like? What do you like? You know, I don't know, something about it. And just like the tonality and just the sonic kind of the essence of it. You know, sonically how it sounds and how it's kind of like pre-distortion, you know, before they had found like, you know, distortion pedals or something, you know. It's just kind of dry, but it's just so classic. It's to me, that's like the roots of metal is in there. And then you listen to the other things that were being put out around that time. And I just really love that. It's when I was working on, because I dove into these when I was working on The Beast Awakens, and I wanted to really be inspired by, you know, if I was trying to make an album that could be of 84,
right? Yeah.
You know, with modern influences and just, you know, little modern kind of nuances, but something that could, you know, possibly in another universe be considered amongst albums of 84, you know, like what would I have been inspired by if I was making an album, you know, in 83 that would be released in 84? Like,
right,
what would I have been inspired by? Like, you know, what were the albums that like my fictional older brother would have had in his, you know, I don't have a brother, but you know, what would my fictional older brother have had been grown up listening to, you know, had been a teenager in 76 and, you know, gave me his record collection when he moved out. Been like, dude, you got to listen to this album right here. It'll change your life. You know, just like something like that. And these albums just really, really speak to me. And, you know, just the fact that I was able to write the album that I wrote, in like, you know, a 3-month span, really wrote every song 100% myself, just sitting at my desk, staring out the window, you know, just like being inspired by the idea of this album, the idea of Sad Wings of Destiny. And then 8 years later, and 8 years is like, in some ways you think, well, that's, you know, quite a while. But then you think like how long the Beatles were together, not eight years. And you know, and then 8 years later, Priest puts out Defenders of the Faith, which is equally as, you know, it's got that much like weight to it, you know, with the Sentinel and with, you know, some heads are going to roll and, you know, shit like that. Rock Hard, Ride Free. And just stuff like that. Just like, wow. Like, where do these keep coming from? You know, when I listen to albums, I think of like, if it really gets me, I'm just like, oh my God, how am I ever going to write anything that's this good?
You know,
with the 12 notes that I have available and not, you know, write something that's already been written. You know, that's like the other part is like, how do I write something adjacent that doesn't sound too, like, doesn't sound like I listened to this and then wrote this, you know, it's how do I write my own thing and create my own sound while still being inspired by my heroes and being inspired by these like monumental recordings, you know. It's very strange. I still don't understand how it's possible. You know, I listened to my album yesterday and I'm just like, how the fuck did this happen? You know, I wrote it by myself and demoed it, you know, at my desk and pissed off my wife and kids and neighbors by, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs, thin walls and like cracks under doors and shit. You know, it's just like, can't soundproof a room, you know, can't soundproof our bedroom. I don't know, my album wasn't recorded like all in a studio. It was, I recorded the demos, I wrote the songs, demoed them, sent the demo parts to my drummer. He recorded his drums, sent those back to me. I replaced my program drums with his, like a demo mix, and then sent that to the bass player, Barry Sparks. And then he sent back his bass parts and then had all like the guitar players send their guitar things and then like put them all into the demos and then took all these pieces and carried them in a basket, you know, to my producer and was like, okay, now we've got to record my rhythm guitars again and vocals. And he's just like, how the fuck did you do this? No one does it like this. And it's like, to have something that sounds cohesive and something that sounds like it was like, you know, 5-6 dudes in a room recording that have been playing together for 12 years and like, you know, this thing. And it was just like, it didn't happen at all like that, you know, just, but having this idea of those sounds of the records that sound that way and that sound so realized. When I listen to these Priest albums and these Dio albums and Sabbath and everything and Maiden, everything sounds so realized and everybody has these ideas and it's 5 or 6 guys bringing in all of their different ideas and compiling them together in this, and everyone's, you know, bringing that in, and it's just like, God, I feel like I contributed like the efforts of like 4 people and then brought in like different guys. And it's just thinking about like, how is that possible? Like, I didn't set out to do that. It just, that's what had to be done in order to have it. It's very strange. And you know, it's strange to be in a room writing something and you're just trying to pop yourself, you know, you're just like, there's no one there to high five. It's just like, oh my God, that sounds so cool. That's such a good idea. yay, we did it, you know, small victories, you know, I don't know.
I just want to touch on a song that I've kind of rediscovered recently, and that's Tyrant.
Yes.
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tyrant. Capture of humanity. Tyrant. Captain of them all. Tyrant. He is destructor. Tyrant. Every man shall fall. Yeah. All of them. I mean, any others? God, I love this album. It's just so good. Any more? What else is there? You know? Gosh, what other songs are on this album?
Genocide.
Yeah, Genocide.
The Ripper. The Ripper.
Oh, The Ripper. Oh, my God. Yeah, The Ripper. Of course. The Ripper?
Yeah.
The Ripper. Bah, bah, bah. Ah, da-na-na-na-na. Yeah, all of it. God, such a great record. And it's how many songs are on it? I don't have like a cue card with it.
Nine songs, four on the A side and five on the B side.
Yeah. Let me see if I can look at it. Sad. Can you still hear me?
Yep, I can still hear you.
Oh, sweet.
Why are you looking at that? It's just unbelievable that that Priest have had such an influence. You know, everyone from the Metallicas to the Panteras to everyone in between, all the way up until you. You know, it's 2021, and they've had an impact on your album, The Beast Awakens. It's unbelievable how powerful this band has been.
It's really something.
Everyone talks Led Zeppelin, everyone talks Black Sabbath, but not enough people do really give Priest the credit they deserve.
Yeah. I just keep finding it's an endless pool of resources, you know, to go and be inspired by. And just like the, you know, looking at a band that's been together for so long and keeps putting out, you know, quality music.
Dude, they're fucking destroying at the moment. They're unbelievable, you know?
With
Richie Falconer and Andy Sneap as well, like, you know, it's such a
shame. Yeah, with Andy, too.
Dude, it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, what's funny is Richie's first show with Priest was with me on Idol. That was his very first performance with Priest.
Oh, really?
Was on stage on TV in front of, you know, 50 million viewers.
Okay, that's funny. That's great.
Very, very, very first time playing with the band. Which is, you know, also crazy. It's amazing to, you know, for my own history, but also to, have, you know, been, a piece of Judas Priest history as
history.
Well.
History. Yep.
In that way. Yeah. It's something. I don't know. I count my blessings all the time.
Love it. Hey, we're going to let you go. Nick, anything to end, mate?
No, dude, I think we covered most of it.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
February 12th, The Beast Awakens. Check it out. Congratulations, man. You know, really, really cool.
Thank you.
Wish you the absolute best with the record, and hopefully you can get out on the road and in the not too distant future.
Yes, definitely. Where you guys live?
Sweden. Stockholm. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I've never been, and hopefully we'll be there with the hardcore superstar boys or something.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
That'll be messy. A dream.
That'd be
real messy. A lot of Jaeger. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Real sticky. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty, man. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Take care, mate.
Thank you.
All the best. Bye.
Killer. Bye.
check out.